Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Be Bold America. I'm your host, Jill Cody, along with my co-host, Pettis Perry. Our program today is From Divide and Conquer to Unite and Prevail. Now that the most toxic election of our lifetime seems to be resolved, we now face the even more challenging task of taking our country forward. It requires cultivating a sane and sacred center that reflects the virtues and values that the 90% of us who aren't sociopaths hold dear. Fortunately, we have the ways and means to turn the ideal into the real deal. If we intentionally use the next 4 years as a transition period from oligarchic rule to self-governance, our future depends on it. Hey, Pettis, how are you?
I'm doing okay, Jill. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. I'm really looking forward to our guest today.
I am as well. I was doing some background work on the Swami, and I'm very interested to hear what he has to say today.
Well, to introduce our guest, Steve Behrman is an author and humorist who spent the past 30 years writing and performing in the guise of the cosmic comic Swami Biyanananda. Swami's comedy has been described both as comedy disguised as wisdom and wisdom disguised as comedy. Prior to launching his career as a Swami, Steve was an educator, author, and publisher. As a political science major, and no, he never did get to dissect a politician in poli-sci lab, Steve has always been a political solutionary, looking to apply what he learned about holistic health to the body politic. We have big things to do. Welcome back to Be Bold America, Steve. It is an honor to have you and the Swami back on the program.
Well, thanks, Jill. Thanks so much for what you're doing. Hi, Pettis. Good to meet you from a distance. I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, well, great meeting you as well, Steve.
Well, Steve, okay. You say we need to cultivate a sane and sacred center. But how do we do that when 74 million Americans voted for Trump, who hold the same so-called virtues and values of a man who is virtueless, valueless, sacredless, and who isn't even close to being sane?
Well, you know, I actually have to agree with you there. I mean, you've nailed the guy. But I think that one of the great qualities that needs to be cultivated is curiosity. And part of that curiosity is uncovering the truth buried in the lie. So, you know, we actually, the body politic did a very functional thing. We de-elected the misleader, we fired the first big shot for the evolution. And last year when I was writing prior to the election, I said we need to do two things. Number one, we need to actually take our country back. And by that I mean actually moving toward that sane and sacred center, you know, that I call it political climate change, warmer hearts and cooler heads. And essentially, the majority of the American people said, you know what, we want warmer hearts and cooler heads. So that was a step in the right direction. That was number one. However, the second part in bringing people together, there has to be the beginning of rehumanizing conversation. So one of the things that I've noticed, and you probably noticed this too, I get a lot of stuff from progressives, and I put myself on all lists. And basically, each side uses their platform to point out the most egregious aspect of the other side's belief system and tends to exaggerate that. And so what happens is that each side is really fighting a straw man or straw woman, a stereotype that probably doesn't even exist. And I'll give you an example. A friend of mine was telling me yesterday that on this one woman who lives in a red area posted something about the election. She runs a restaurant in that area, and people from social media began attacking her, you know, because she had a progressive point, and all of her neighbors, her red county neighbors, who love her restaurant and who love her, said, no, this is, you know, you're getting this person wrong. What happens is when you have social media and you can just lob grenades over this wall, it's very easy to dehumanize. When you're actually in a situation where you have to face people face to face, and the structure has to do with listening respectfully and speaking from the heart, then we are way, way, way more susceptible to being that 75% who want to work things out, even if as Republicans we voted for Donald Trump because he was that side's lesser evil.
Pettis, do you have some comments?
Yeah, I do. I find that fascinating, first of all, because I think we have to find ways to bridge commonality so that we can get past the fragmentation that occurs on the fringes. And, you know, I think that we have to find a way to really functionalize our politics. But the question is, how do we get, you know, past the big lie to really getting people together so that we can maximize what the 75% have to offer?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, you know, if you want to look at the quote-unquote the big lie, there's a number of different layers behind it. And again, I think that, you know, because we are dealing with a sociopathic force, that's how they're going to, that's how a con man operates. In fact, I was working on a piece called, you know, Donald Trump and QAnon, the super duper duper meets the super duped. And when I was a kid in New York working at the Hotel Shelburne in Manhattan, one of my older coworkers, who I became friends with, took me aside one day and said, I'm going to give you a seminar. And he gave me a seminar on every con game known to man. And what I learned from this brilliant two-day seminar on con games is that we only and always con ourselves. There's something that we want. There's something that might be illegal. It might be not ours to have. We might want to take a shortcut. And whoever it is who is conning us knows how to play that dream to us. So Donald Trump went into a very, very well-cultivated field. It was a field that was cultivated, you know, and Jill, you've pointed this out in your prior work. It was cultivated by the Powell Memorandum and the Reaganism, and then Reaganism institutionalized as Clintonism and Obamaism. You know, because essentially what's happened in our lifetime is that the Democratic Party has shifted from the party of the, you know, working people to the party of the technocracy, and that's who pays the bills, and that's the company store they owe their soul to. And so part of the field that's been, there have been many, many people pointing out how the Democrats were not cultivating the field that should have been cultivated. You know, Rabbi Michael Lerner, you know, has written about how, you know, spirituality was defaulted to the right wing. Poor George Lakoff, you know, kind of a voice in the bewilderness, you know, talking about, no, you can't reason with most people. You have to recognize the emotional pulls that are pulling at them. And so the way to dismantle the lie is to actually create a bigger truth that people can gather around to distract them. One of my favorite mentors who I wish I had had a chance to meet was Milton Erickson, who is the brilliant psychotherapist who a lot of what they now call neurolinguistic programming was based on his work. So Erickson, this is being in the, you know, the early 1920s, doing his residency at a mental hospital. He was a psychiatrist. There's an inmate at the mental hospital who has delusions of being Jesus Christ. What does Erickson do? He comes up to the patient with a bunch of carpentry tools and says, I understand you have some experience as a carpenter. Well, the guy had to become a carpenter. So my point is that you don't want to contradict a delusion. You want to simply include it, go beyond it, expand it, and create something that is more truthful and more compelling.
Well, Steve, you were bringing up curiosity at the beginning, and it reminded me of a phrase, you know, curiosity killed the cat. But then I heard many years ago the second half, which is, but satisfaction brought it back. And you were talking about creating a bigger truth. You know, we have a big lie and creating a bigger truth that we need to rally around. I find this difficult when the conservative right-wing media, television, and talk shows, you can't get a bigger truth in there. I mean, the bigger truth is that President Biden won twice as much as Donald Trump did in 2016, and it was a free and fair election, and you just can't get that bigger truth into the Republican bloodstream. Your thoughts?
The point is that by a higher truth, I mean, what is it that we all want? See, what's happened, and I know both of you have seen the documentary, Social Dilemma.
Oh, yes,
and
excellent.
We've all been exposed to how on both sides, the toxic narratives are the ones that are fed. I get the Daily Coast. I get Huffington Post. I get all of these, and what they are only and always exaggerating, being enraged about what the other side is doing. Now, what I'm talking about here is people are in a trance, and it's very easy to see the kind of trance that the other side is in because, you know, we see the naked emperor's buttocks, okay? So it's not a matter of, you know, no, the election wasn't stolen. I mean, that's, you know, that reality check will continue to bounce, and more and more and more people are going to drop off that wagon. But as we didn't learn through the entire Donald Trump experience, that particular parasitic vampire feeds off of media attention. And so we have given way too much attention to the divisive conversations and way too little attention of what kinds of things really are bringing people together. There's a new documentary that just came out called The Reunited States of America. In this documentary, there is a conservative couple from Texas and their three children, and he was once a Republican. They figure they're in their maybe late 30s, early 40s, perhaps. And he was, you know, an operative for the Republican Party and got tired of doing that. He got tired of doing exactly what you were just talking about. And he and his wife and their three little girls decide to get in an RV and go out and look for America. It sounds like a campy idea, but what you see in the conversations are people meeting people and hearing things that they've never heard before. They're meeting people and having to see people as human beings rather than as stereotypes. And this is, you know, it's so easy to stereotype the other person rather than have this first of all, space for a meeting of the hearts. I'll give you an example. Something that happened many years ago. I was listening to Patricia's son, who was a spiritual teacher, spiritual psychologist, and many years ago she was doing a talk at a New Age bookstore, and there were four fundamentalist Christians outside picketing her. And she said, "I'm going to talk with them." And the bookstore owner says, "You know what? You can't talk with those people." And she said, "Well, I'm going to give it a try." So she goes out there and talks to them 10 minutes, and after 10 minutes, three of the people put down their picket signs, hug Patricia, and say, "Wow, that's just what Jesus would say." And the fourth one continued to picket and kept his sign. So I would suggest, and I've seen this 75%, I've seen that numerous places, I would suggest that in the right circumstances and right setting, 75% of people are susceptible to respectful communication and love and so on. And what happens then is that the divisive narratives become less important.
You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM, many voices, one station. Listen globally online from the KSQD.org homepage. Also, if you want to contact either Pettis or myself or have ideas for the show, you can email us at info@KSQD.org. Here with co-host Pettis Perry, I'm Jill Cody.
KSQD thanks the following recurring donors who support our wonderful programs by providing monthly contributions: Kelly Arbor, Linda Baker, and Sherry Bob. You inspire us to give you our very best at 90.7 FM. May you also inspire others to donate on our website, ksqd.org.
Today, our topic is From Divide and Conquer to Unite and Prevail. Pettis and I are speaking with Steve Behrman, also known as Swami Biyanananda. Find the Swami at wakeuplaughing.com. And the Swami would like you to join the uprising to create functional politics. Pettis?
Yeah, I've been fascinated by your conversation, Steve. I think you really have struck a nerve with me, and I think you're spot on. I think when we lead with the heart, it changes the dynamics. And I believe that the idea of getting to know people is at the crux of many of the problems, because we don't know people. We make all sorts of grandiose assumptions based on the stereotypes, as you were talking, which then disenfranchises the people that we say that we might want to get to know. So in your work, how do you begin to make those bridges? How do you lead with the heart? What do you do? What do you suggest we should do?
Well, first of all, you know, there's a really good role model. I'm sure, Pettis, you've seen the movie Accidental Courtesy. The blues pianist, Daryl Davis, black blues pianist who has been cultivating connections and relationships with KKK members for 30 years. And he's got a closet full of KKK robes that have been given to him by people who've given it up. And if you watch the documentary about him, you recognize that while there are people who are susceptible to that kind of connection and human cultivation, there are also people who are not. And I think one of the things that progressives have maybe had a hard time dealing with is the presence of actual evil in the world, you know. And it's something that, you know, there are people who are not susceptible to kindness and all of that. So as a preface to what you're asking, I think it's very, very important that we recognize that there are certain terrorists that you can't negotiate with, and that while I can understand why certain people voted for Donald Trump, I am supremely grateful that he is on the outside of the tent doing you know what in, rather than on the inside of the tent doing you know what out. So in terms of how we engage with people, well, on our last tour, which we didn't tour last year, but in 2019, across the country, I made it my point to engage with millennial white men who I suspected were alt-right, who are buying the conservative narrative, who are listening to Alex Jones and all of that stuff, okay? And so the conversation would be, I would say, you know, the oldest political scam in history is divide and conquer. And the people of this country have been divided into two competing tribes that have been fed narratives to make sure that they don't have functional conversations with each other. And so consequently, you know, while we've been arguing about this, the Commonwealth has been stolen by a very small percentage of the uncommonly wealthy. You know what the response was 100% of the time? Wow, that's absolutely right. So the hidden secret behind Make America Great Again is the breach between the progressive and the populist impulses in this country. And they've been very carefully, the differences have been very carefully cultivated. The culture wars, beginning with the Vietnam War, that separated the pro-war from the anti-war demonstrators. you know, that breach was filled, you know, as the women's movement developed, as the pro-life, pro-choice movements began to conflict and clash with one another. And it just so happens that being divided into these two tribes is very convenient for the powers that be in power. And, you know, one of the phrases, and I've used this with the alt-right people, and they get this completely. I say, you know, we've been so distracted by conspiracy theories that we haven't noticed the cons piracy facts. You know, so if you understand that basically there's a con game going on. We've been divided into these two tribes, and it doesn't matter what the people of this country really want. If it does not jibe with what the misfortune 500 want, or what the global corporate elite want, it ain't going to happen. And so part of the great upwising and waking up and wising up is people, first of all, having the awareness that we've been hoodwinked by a bunch of winking hoods. How many billions of dollars was spent on this election? Was it $3 billion or $4 billion? Do you know? I don't remember. Something like that.
Something like that. Mm-hmm.
And all we got was this lousy T-shirt. So in other words, we really, you know, basically what we got was going back to Obama. That's what we got. We got, oh, my God, you know, we have adults in the room. Okay, that's saying something. However, we are still we still have to address, and this is getting more amplification on your question, Pettis. Part of engaging with people is listening to people, asking them why, and in my conversations, and I've had many of them. The people that I've talked with are not racist people. However, they are people who want to preserve some legacy systems like privacy, like not being under surveillance all the time. And they see that this quote-unquote New World Order, to use a cliche, is essentially a top-down imposed totalitarian Orwellian system that is beginning with the censorship that we're seeing right now, the censorship of alternative narratives related, not just related to COVID, but in the process, they're deplatforming vitamin C, vitamin D. They're using it to deplatform all of the alternative forms of medicine that between 40 and 50% of people in this country use as a prior choice to the allopathic model. Then you're wondering, why is it that 30% of people don't want to get these vaccinations, you know? So I think part of engaging in conversation is listening for the actual grievance beneath the externally imposed and internally cultivated fear-based, anger-based narrative.
Well, Steve, I don't disagree with anything you've said, and I still have a little trouble with it. So help me out here.
You have a lot of trouble with it, I'm hoping.
You know, you're talking about that we're all in a trance. And, you know, there's two sides to this trance. I feel that there's a side that is constructive and creative and supports democracy and social justice and inclusion. And then the other trance, there's people that are being destructive, repelling, will say anything to just be offensive. They're undemocratic. And I see both of those working at the same time. So when you say we need to get to know people, not on their stereotype, I look at what their actions are. You know, what, you know, don't look at what they say, but what they do. And we had an attack on the Capitol that seems to be supported, violence seems to be supported by a majority of the Republican Party now. We had 147 Republicans who voted to overturn a free and fair election, doing so after the attack on the Capitol. We have a woman who's elected to Congress. And you can't ignore, you know, these fringe people you can ignore, but when they get into Congress and they start talking about frazzled drip and 9/11 was an inside job and Las Vegas was mass shooting was staged and that California's wildfires were done by Jewish controlled laser beams. She's in Congress and there are other people in Congress that, well, she got a standing ovation right there in Congress when she didn't even apologize. She just sort of explained and went on. So I hold these dualities of, yes, we need to listen, but are they listening to us? We're just listening to them. My duality is there's two trances. So in the 3 minutes before break, help me out here. We can continue after the break, though, as well.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I think that that, of course, is a valid point. And again, you cannot engage with people who are not willing to engage. And that was what Daryl Davis found that with a certain percentage of the Klan members he engaged with, there was no engagement. And then others allowed themselves to have the cognitive dissonance. So I don't disagree with you that this is a cult-like trance that is a brainwash and a mind fog that is exceedingly toxic. At the same time, and again, I'm not looking to create a false equivalency, but at the same time, there's certain, like something you just said, I happen to believe 9/11 was an inside job. I happen to believe that. So when you put that in the mix with this other crazy crap, then I know that the forces of disinformation are doing their job, which is to taint good information with bad and make sure nobody goes down that investigatory track.
Well, you kind of stunned me there that you believe that 9/11 was an inside job. That to me is kind of stunning.
I've been looking at this stuff since 2004. Did you know that Van Jones and I signed the exact same statement in 2004 saying that there needed to be a reinvestigation of 9/11 because of questions that were vexing? And he took his, after he got fired from the Obama administration, he took his name off of that. But there were many mainstream people when they were looking at George Bush as the perpetrator, who actually were thinking that if you saw the Project for New American Century, we need a new Pearl Harbor in order to fight these enemies. You'd have to be quite a coincidence theorist to not begin to look at, there might be a relationship between this. So I don't know what did happen. I'm not saying that I have the story of what happened. I think there's a lot of disinformation about 9/11. But I have a feeling, I've got a strong feeling, that the official story is not exactly what happened.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Our topic is From Divide and Conquer to Unite and Prevail. Here with Pettus Perry, I'm your host, Jill Cody.
Hello, K-Squid listeners. I'm Tom Hartman, and each weekday at 4 p.m., I bring you a different perspective on the news than you're likely to hear on most media outlets. Please join me on KSQD Santa Cruz, your ink spot on the dial for the Tom Hartman program, heard now for the first time ever in the Monterey Bay Area at 90.7 FM, weekdays at 4 p.m. That's Progressive Talking Conversation with me, Tom Hartman, weekdays at 4 p.m. on KSQD 90.7 FM. Tag, you're it.
We're back, and we're speaking with Swami Biyanananda, who says about creating a sane and sacred world, quote, I know what you're thinking. I'm proposing a sane world. I must be crazy. Are you crazy, Swami?
Well, absolutely. And I think that everything being upside down, we need to create a sane asylum. Together we go sane. Let's go sane together. Did you know that the word sanity has the same root as sanitarium and as health? So what sanity means is essentially a healthy, sacred center inside. And we have been driven crazy, intentionally, I believe, by toxic political narratives. And the two drugs that have damaged the political, that are body politic so much, hopium and Dinyatol. Opium and Dinyatol. We've had those two drugs, and that's why we're suffering from, well, we have truth decay, right? We have truth decay. We have deficit in attention disorder. We have that. And we have irony deficiency. Seeing a doctor won't help, but seeing a paradox will. And, of course, we have erectile dysfunction.
Pettis, do you have hopium?
I certainly do. I live with hopium all the time. I'm a hopium addict. I admit it. You don't have a question. Well, I have a question for you, Steve.
Yes.
You know, I part of my work is healing work. In trying to create trauma-informed communities and really trying to help people find the hope in hopeless. So I'm very serious about the hopium matter. But, you know, so I'm always looking for ways that we might be able to use the tools we have for healing. So my question for you is, how can we use comedy not just to get maybe some answers or discussions going around the body politic, but also taking this time as we try to get people to shift their thinking to new ways of thinking, using comedy as part of the transformation process, but also the healing process?
You know, what a great question. And the first thing that comes to mind, you know, back in the in the early 1980s, I was living in Michigan, and the great comedian, and I would say shaman, Dick Gregory, came to do a program at Oakland University. And it was a filled auditorium, and the group was, you know, racially mixed, pretty balanced, black and white, and so on. And Dick Gregory did his thing. And first of all, he started deconstructing the white man. And, oh, man, it just brilliant, skewered the white man. Then he went on to the white woman. Then he went on to the black man, and then he went on to the black woman. And everybody in that room, every group got deconstructed and yet resurrected. It was the most amazing piece of shamanic work I've ever seen, and one of the few times being in a mixed race group, at the end of this performance, people are looking at each other, really looking at one another, like everybody was busted and everybody was elevated at the same time. Now, he was a master at that, and he had control of the room in the sense that, I remember years ago, somebody asked him, well, how come you people can use the N-word and we can't? And he said, well, I guess I just don't like the way you say it. Okay, so he had permission to do this. So I think the most important thing about humor is permission. So the easiest way to get permission is to have the humor be about yourself, not in a derogatory way, but in a self-accepting way. You know, and we know that a genius at this was Abraham Lincoln, that was one of the ways he... one of the tools he used to disarm other people. He was in a debate, and his opponent called him two-faced, and he stops and points to his face, and he said, if I had two faces, would I be using this one?
The power of the comeback.
I'm from New York, and my religion as a kid was baseball. You know, one of my favorite baseball characters from New York was Casey Stengel, who was manager of the Yankees. But when he was a rookie, many years before I was born, the fans in New York decided that they didn't like him. And every time he walked onto the playing field, he would get booed. And one day he's in New York, walks up to bat, the fans boo him, and he tipped his cap, and a little sparrow flew out from under his cap. And everyone in the ballpark stood up and cheered, and they never booed him again.
That's a fabulous story.
That's a wonderful story.
You know, and the moral is, if you're going to flip somebody the bird, make it a real bird.
Make it a real bird. You know, what we've been talking about here, Steve, is reimagining America. You know, we want to reimagine an America that supports all of us better, that is, you know, that we lead from the heart. And, you know, what principles do you think we as Americans need to stand for a reimagining an America that's more heart-centered? For example, I was talking to Pettis a while ago that, you know, one principle can be the first listener, because a lot of people don't listen. They want to talk, or they're preparing to talk, but they aren't being the first listener. I'm thinking that is one principle that would be constructive. Do you have other ideas of principles where we can reimagine America and live a more principle-centered life?
Yeah, first of all, I really want to accent what you just said. In fact, one of the organizations that is bringing people together in these conversations is called Listen First.
Ah.
So they're right on track. I think the guy's name is Pierce Godwin. And as a matter of fact, something that's been very heartening, I'm now in touch with a consortium of about 350 faith-based groups. And the two things that they're focused on are the beloved community, meaning a community where nobody falls through the cracks. Now, you know, in the Catholic Church, there's the division. If you eliminate the division between abortion and non-abortion, if you take that off the table,
right,
there's been a very, very, very long history. There's been the Catholic worker, there's been liberation theology, and all of this essentially focusing on care for the poor and actually bringing people, making sure that everybody is cared for in a community. There's also care for creation, which has to do with caring for the earth and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, because of the politicization of religiosity and the capture of a lot of Christian fundamentalism by evangelical conservatism, this opportunity until now has been missed. But when you begin to get people together working on projects to actually create the betterment here and there, there are people of, you know, people of all political persuasions who volunteer, who help with other people, who want to see a world that works for everybody. But because of the narratives and how the narratives are presented, what's cultivated is fear. Right behind all of the anger that people have is fear, fear of the other. So in communication, anything you can do to alleviate the fear of the other person will create more space for communication. And then the other thing is, examine your own assumptions. You know, examine. I think that one of the biggest problems with the progressive side is that because progressives tend to think that they're more well read and they believe in science and so on, that they're right about everything. And if you look at the mainstream press, if you look at the New York Times and CNN, et cetera, and then you look beyond that, you see how much they're not reporting, and that the people who think they are so well informed may not be that much different from the people who've gone deep into the rabbit hole with QAnon and think that they know everything. It's really very interesting when you allow yourself to look outside the matrix of the two political narratives and the forces that are perpetuating those narratives. And on both sides, there are well-meaning people. My friend and associate Byron Belitzos went to Washington, D.C. January 6th to interview those people who are at this demonstration. And what he found was that, you know, there are people who are definitely deluded and misled in many, many ways. And he also found that, you know, these were people who wanted justice, wanted truth. They, you know, what they've been told is so twisted that somehow they're quoting Martin Luther King. And because we've been so misinformed by our political narratives, and because there hasn't been a central Walter Cronkite, it's been 40 years since he stopped broadcasting, there hasn't been a central place where we can go, ah, there's one reality that we can all, yes, that is the way it is. And so we have to rebuild that one conversation at a time. I was speaking with somebody who is familiar with Mondragon, and Mondragon is this amazing conglomerate of worker-owned businesses in the Basque region of Spain. And she was telling me about how the folks at Mondragon helped heal and dismantle the Basque separatist movement and bring them back, you know, into common society. And the way it was done was a few people at a time. You find people who are open to a conversation. You bring them into a conversation. You have their friends bring people into a conversation, and so on and so on. And the point is that in this conversation, you're not trying to, you don't have the covert agenda of converting somebody. You're simply there to listen and have their beliefs be exactly as they are. And out of that space, miracles can happen, because the heart has been reintroduced. We've had disheartenment in the heartland because money and the power that money brings has become the one dominant bottom line force. And unless we reassert our humanity at the center and rehumanize one another at the heart, we will not be able to solve the real problems that we have.
Well, I don't disagree at all. I just don't know if we have enough time at one conversation, you know, to make change one conversation at a time. There's a real, as you know, Steve, a real push in anti-democracy, because it gets in the way of oligarchs, and it gets in the way of corporations, and it gets in the way of Go ahead.
I see it differently.
Oh, good.
I see that there are two toxic gangs. We'll call them the sharks and the jets. Okay. And the sharks, we know who the sharks are. Those are the oligarchs. Those are the stateless, overtly sociopathic forces that are blatantly, we fortunately, you know, got to excise that particular sociopathogen from the body politic, although that malignancy can return. However, the other force that we are having to deal with is the conspiracy. And the jets are a little more slimy, a little bit more slippery. The jets are the people who represent the same oligarchic forces. They represent the same multinational corporations that represent Monsanto, that have taken over the World Health Organization, that have taken over these international authorities. And if you've read, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, John Perkins' book written 20 years ago, you know that this is what the World Bank has been doing for 40 or 50 years. They've been blackmailing the people of the world, taking their resources, exploitation, et cetera, et cetera. We have a few voices in the bewilderness like Vandana Shiva and so on, who are talking about the devastation that was done by Bill Gates and his programs in India. This is not a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy fact. And so there are many, many, many people who voted for Donald Trump, not because of these racist considerations, but because they believed that he was the only firewall to protect us from this international authority taking over everything and you know, kind of soft core totalitarianism through the what we're not allowed to see, what we're not allowed to read, from the narratives that, you know, if ever the mainstream media mentions Robert F. Kennedy Jr., they always write, and they discredited Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Well, you know, the people in the world who know that certain things are not discredited, and they see that the mainstream media is talking that way, the mainstream media loses all credibility. And that's why it doesn't matter to those people that the facts show that Biden won the election. It doesn't matter. In a court of law, there's no court of law that could possibly show that Biden didn't win. But it doesn't matter to those people because they have lost so much trust in our untrustworthy media and untrustworthy system that they are susceptible to being taken in by this toxic cult.
Oh, that's powerful. You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen globally online from the KSQD.org homepage. Here with my co-host, Pettis Perry, I'm also your host, Jill Cody.
Buddhism, Judaism, Baha'i, Islam, Christianity, Hinduism. Sound interesting? Faith Matters is a unique bi-monthly program that explores spirituality, life, and meaning with local religious leaders. We discuss areas of common ground and also identify distinct differences among diverse spiritual perspectives. Join us on the second and fourth Sunday evening of every month from 6 to 7 as we have thought-provoking conversations about Faith Matters on 90.7 KSQD.
Today, our topic is From Divide and Conquer to Unite and Prevail. And Pettis and I are speaking with Steve Behrman, author, educator, comedic performer, and political solutionary, who is host of the Wiki Politiki radio podcast to be found at wikipolitiki.com. That's Wiki, W-I-K-I, Politiki, P-O-L-I-T-I-K-I.com. Pettis?
Yeah, this has been a very interesting conversation with you, Steve. I greatly appreciate your perspective. I've been thinking about the role of belief systems and how belief systems shape behavior. And those belief systems can do exactly what you were talking about prior to the break of becoming filters that prevent people from taking in information that might be helpful. There's also the idea of confirmation bias and the psychological part of having to struggle with it psychologically when you think about cognitive dissonance. So can you talk a little bit about ways that we might be able to reshape belief systems? Maybe this is a little bit more of what we were talking about earlier. But what do you think about the role of belief systems? And I guess some of the idea of what Lipton talks about in terms of spontaneous evolution and how we can really use that to propel us forward as humanity.
You know, that's a really good question, Pettis. And part of the complexity of belief systems is that so much gets programmed in when we're not conscious of it by the age of six. And so anybody who's been in a relationship knows that often that argument that you have all the time really isn't about what's going on now. It's about something that's triggered in your past that is an unresolved issue. And so psychological warfare has really become greatly advanced since the days of Edward Bernays, who is called the father of modern public relations. And he started in the 1920s. And there have been very, very sophisticated ways of hooking people in psychologically. QAnon and those kinds of narratives is a really interesting example because it's done kind of like a video game where you tune in every day to get the latest tantalizing clue. And, you know, there have been people who've their spouses have going, I don't know what's happened to him or her. They're totally involved in this narrative, and there's some kind of hook in the mind that gets hooked. It's very complicated, but part of awakening from this trance has to do with re-engaging the heart in all ways possible. Many of these, in a certain regard, people are experiencing realities that they don't like the reality that they're in. They prefer living in this alternative reality. Now, that's fine and good, but as Jill pointed out earlier, if they happen to be in Congress, that's incongruous. That's incongruous. Not in Congress, it's in Congress. So I think that rehumanizing conversations, the healthy part of cognitive dissonance is when you first begin to realize that somebody that you disagree with is a human being. And you begin to recognize that human aspect of it. That was the bravery of Daryl Davis walking into the lion's den and looking at these people who, hate black people, quote unquote. And he goes, kindly, he says, I'm looking at you and you're looking at me. What is there to hate about me? And then all of a sudden, the program gets disrupted. If we only listen to our own side and we only engage with our own people, you said confirmation bias earlier, Pettis, that's what that is. And there's a certain, while I'm certainly relieved that the entire world believes that I, like I do, but it's much, much more helpful to be able to find ways to engage at the heart. I'll give you an example. I interviewed on my WikiPolitiki radio show Randall Paul, who is a Mormon, lives in Salt Lake City, and he just wrote a book with two other guys. One is a fellow conservative LDS guy, and the other characterizes himself as a gay Marxist libertarian. And the two of them, the LDS guy and the gay Marxist libertarian, are the best of friends, even though they disagree about lots and lots and lots of things. And so they've created a pathway for engaging with one another and being able to fully hear the passion of the other person's belief, and yet going, isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Without engaging on the battlefield. Without engaging on the battlefield, but simply listening to that and go, wow, now I understand. I understand a lot. You know, why did my friend from Michigan vote for Bernie Sanders in the 2016 primary and vote for Donald Trump in the election? Other than the fact that he lost all of his friends in the process, why did he do that? I was curious enough to engage in that conversation to find out.
Now,
that's
Steve,
why he and I are still friends.
Steve, that when you were talking about the two very different people, the LDS and the gay, libertarian,
gay Marxist libertarian.
Well, to be able to listen to another as different as those two appear to be, you need to be pretty secure in your own principles and your own what you stand for, so you don't feel threatened by another person. So that leads me to the question, Steve, of what does living a more meaningful and principle-centered life mean to you?
You know, to me, and this has really been very more true during this lockdown period of time, it has to do with finding my own sane and sacred center. Finding that center of love where all is well. And it sounds like a cliche, but when my wife, Trudy, and I, we don't watch the news at night. We watch things that are going to cultivate that love in us, because that becomes the prime place that we're coming from. You know, the Swami, people have asked the Swami, Swami, can I uplift humanity? And Swami looks at them, and their mouth is all downturned in a frown. He goes, well, first of all, uplift the corners of your own mouth. So I think we have the responsibility, just as you had pointed out, that if we want to engage with other people, it's not so much being secure in our beliefs, but being secure in who we are and what we know, what's fundamental that goes beyond belief. And I think that that there is that sane and sacred center. There is that ineffable, you know, whether you believe in a God or whether you just see this as this magnificent universe and cosmos that's bigger than us. And once we begin to recognize that our little ego isn't the only thing in the world, then that opens us up to being more compassionate. And having progressive ideas doesn't necessarily make you more compassionate. You know, it's an ideology until it's lived. So I see many areas where I go, wow, I wasn't very loving and kind in that encounter. I just yelled at somebody over the phone. Was that love thy neighbor? You know, part of this is, and Pat, this is a whole other, we have a whole other hour conversation on belief.
Well, I was just going to say that because we just have about a minute and a half in the show, and I just wanted to thank you, Swami. It's been an honor. Thank you so much. And I want to thank Be Bold America's program engineer, Emily Donham, and Howard Feldstein, KSQD's program director, and give another big thank you to you, to the terrific bold guest we have, Steve Behrman, also known as the cosmic comic Swami Biyanananda. So thank you, Steve, very much.
Yep. Thank you, and hope to see you on the fun way.
Coming next on Sunday, March 14th, Radical Humility. Please join Pettis and me on Sunday, March 14th at 5 p.m. for speaking with Rebecca Modrake and Jamie Vanderbrock, who co-edited Radical Humility, Essays on Ordinary Acts. Their book is a deep dive on principle-centered living. Can a person be both arrogant and humble, or both proud and humble? Maybe, maybe not. We'll find out. That's again Sunday, March 14th at 5 p.m. You're listening to KSQD 90.7 FM, Santa Cruz, many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. Stay tuned for Faith Matters with Seth Shapiro. My name is Jill Cody, and I'm here with Pettis Perry. Thank you for listening to Be Bold America. Until next time, keep, stop, start.